Now, in the parables, we see that the water is the same for all. The rain falls on all alike. The sun shines on all alike. Not more for some and less for other plants. But the plants themselves are all different. Some plants are big. Other plants are small. Moreover, there are many different species. There are hundreds, thousands of different species. But they all receive the rain. They all receive the sunlight. And they all, according to their different natures, grow. But though they receive the same rain, the same light, though they all grow in different ways. A tree grows up into a tree. A flower grows up into a flower. A rose bush produces big red blossoms. A crocus bulb produces small yellow ones or small white ones. In the same way, some plants, as they grow, shoot up into the air. Others, as they grow, creep along the ground. And others, again, clasp bigger and stronger plants. But they all grow. They all grow according to their own nature. And it's just the same, the parable says, or suggests, is just the same with human beings. They all receive the same truth. They all hear what is in principle the same spiritual teaching. And they all grow. But the strange, the astonishing, and also the wonderful thing about it is they all grow in different ways. They all grow according to their own nature. They don't grow according to somebody else's nature. They all hear, they all imbibe the same teaching, believe in the same teaching, in a sense follow the same path. But what happens? They go off and do what seem to be completely different things, but they're all growing. Some people, as they grow, will go more and more deeply into meditation. They spend most of their time meditating, not much contact with other people, perhaps no contact with other people. But others, again, according to their nature, as they grow, may take up, say, social service, social work. Others, again, may burst forth into song, as it were, may start writing poetry or painting pictures. And others, perhaps the majority, will simply go on being themselves, only more and more so, without displaying any particular specific talent. But they'll all go on growing. They'll all go on developing. And we may even say that they'll go on becoming more and more different from one another as they grow and as they develop. But at the same time, very paradoxically, they'll also become more and more like each other. Because they'll all be becoming more aware, more sensitive, more compassionate, and of course more alive. So this means, or this suggests at least, that in the spiritual life, in the course of which people grow and develop truly, there can be no question of regimentation. It's reasonable to expect that with a little effort, with a little endeavour, human beings, even all human beings, will grow, will develop. But it isn't reasonable to expect all human beings to follow the same pattern of development. And this, unfortunately, is often forgotten. We find something, or we discover something, or come across something, for instance, that we ourselves find very helpful to our own development, to our own growth. But we tend to think that everybody else will, or even everybody else ought to, find it helpful too. And if we're not careful, we shall even start insisting that they must find it helpful. And of course, sometimes the opposite is the case. For us, we discover something is not helpful, at least not at present. So we refuse to recognize that it may be helpful to other people, even though it isn't helpful to us. And I must confess that when I came back to this country in 1964, after spending 20 years in the East, I found in the Buddhist movement in this country as it then was quite a lot of this sort of thing. I found, for instance, that there were some people who found, quite rightly, meditation very, very helpful indeed, and they therefore devoted a number of hours every day to the practice of meditation. But they tended to declare that the practice of studying the scriptures or reading about Buddhism at all was completely useless. They said nobody should read, nobody should study, they should only meditate. And nobody who called themselves Buddhist should be expected or allowed to do anything else, just meditate as many hours a day as possible. If you did that, you were a Buddhist. If you didn't, well, you just weren't. But other people I found preferred study. And these people, who tended to be a bit bookish, these people tended to say that people in the West, being tense and full of problems and rather difficult in all sorts of ways, were not ready for such a sublime and spiritual practice as meditation at all. And therefore they said that people should be encouraged to study the literature and discouraged from meditating, or at any rate, meditating too much. And in fact, some people in those days used to say that meditation was dangerous. And they used to say that if you insisted on meditating, then 5 minutes at a time was quite enough. And this was one view. And again, I found that there were other people who were rather against ritual, anything even ceremonial or even colourful. They didn't find it helpful themselves for one reason or another, so they tended to say that it was bad in general. Not only that, they tended to say that nobody wanted it anyway, which I soon found was not at all true. And in the same way, one often finds that certain people find the approach to Buddhism or to the truth or the higher evolution represented by some particular school or tradition helpful. But unfortunately, they don't just make use of that method or that approach. They become rather sectarian. They say, well, this school, this particular tradition, and only this, is really Buddhism. And if you want to be a Buddhist, then you've got to follow this and this alone. Otherwise, you aren't really a Buddhist at all. Well, if one adopts this sort of attitude, it's really just as bad as Orthodox Christianity. In fact, it represents, we may say, a carrying over of Christian attitudes into Buddhism and Buddhist life itself.